This is Mile High.
Do I want to tell the story or do I want to show the message?
You've got a lot of work to do between Mile High.
The time has come where we can know.
We have a responsibility, an ethical and moral responsibility.
We have to do it better in order to move people along.
Up, down, inside out.
If you get your mind right,
it is not. It is a receiver of thought.
Because love is my first technique.
It's now time for the show.
Hello and welcome to another Mile High podcast. I'm Dr. Dan Lemberger and I'm here with Dr. Liz Anderson Peacock, an extraordinary chiropractor, humanitarian making changes in her community and the world. And we are so gifted to have you coming with us to Mile High 4 here in Colorado, which is going to be August 18th through 21st. And I also do have to say that I believe you are going to be our first Canadian speaker, which is awesome. And you are going to open up the floodgates for all the amazing Canadians coming down, not just the snowbirds to Florida, but actually to an equally sometimes cold place, Colorado. So welcome, Dr. Liz.
It's my privilege.
So you are amazingly involved in chiropractic in your community. We'll get into that for those of you who haven't already had the honor of meeting you. You know, we share a quote with your podcast, and yours is about life is about connection. Maybe you can just share a little bit about people of what that meaning is for you and for them.
Okay, well, you know, I guess most simply is that to me, life is about connection. And we can take it from a macro level, we can take it from a micro level, but let's sort of maybe look at the sort of the, I'm going to even say, let's go back to the Big Bang, is that, you know, when we had this Big Bang, you would think that after something all of a sudden explodes, you would have chaos. But what initially happened, I suppose, was perhaps chaos, but birthing from chaos was order. And that's sort of an interesting start, I think, because what then was present in the universe that created order? And back from chiropractic philosophy, we start talking about that, the major premise, which, you know, that we're really looking at that there is some sort of organizing principle that we call the universal intelligence. And we can go from the micro level that if you're going from, you know, the atomic level, there's order within an atom, there's order within a molecule, there's order within ordinals of a cell, and then the cell, and then the tissue, and then an organ, and then an organ system, and an organism. And then there's order with how that organism can interact with other organisms, if you will.
Right.
And so we take that from a body to a family, to a community, to a country, to the world. And it never ceases to amaze me that when we are connected, we seem to have a life with far greater ease. It doesn't mean we still don't have problems and challenges,
right. But
it's like there's ease.
Yeah.
And when we are disconnected, what happens? And it's that sequelae that happens. And so to me, chiropractic is all about order. It's all about coming together in a community, with either within a body or within a community as a relationship. And to me, I define community as coming together in unity. So to me, it's a matter of how do we connect with ourselves first and foremost, because before we can connect with others, we really need to know where we're at, because that presence or lack of is going to dictate the way that we view the world, the way that we see ourselves participating in the world, and the way that we respond back to it. And so for us to help others, we need to be deeply connected within first.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that's so powerful, because I think, you know, very often we as chiropractors have a tendency to think more in a compartmentalized manner, that there is obviously a causality. Like you said, the person connects out and ripples out, you know, and has a resonance into the community, into the world. But I think, you know, as we look, I'll say, in a pure segmental sort of mindset of humanity, we have a greater impact than making just that one impact with that one person. And the adjustment has an impact way beyond just that one individual. And I love your definition of community, of coming together in unity and that connection. And something that we really strive for here with Mile High is creating a community of chiropractors who are out there doing exactly what you're talking about, making greater connection for individuals to themselves, and obviously creating better connection of individuals to humanity. And that's awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it helps also create that relevant meaning on a consistent basis in practice, because certainly one of the things that I found is that sometimes you can get into a bit of a rut with things that seem to be a bit repetitive, and then how do you give that person your best in every single moment? And especially if they ask you the same question for the 10th time, you know, it's how do you stay just as fresh that 10th time as you do that very first time?
Right.
And I think that when we can recognize what's important to put our energy towards, what is our preferred future, what problems need solving, what's important to dedicate ourselves to from a resource standpoint. And of course, you know, as our resources, it's our time, our talent, our money, our expertise, those are all resources that we have. What's really important, and is it going to be in alignment with your general view of reality?
Right. Yeah. And, you know, that's, I think, the most important thing is how does that congruence come about, and people can, you know, be connected to themselves and their own congruence, and that
right.
You know, ripples out. So we'll get into a little bit about the stuff that you do today, but maybe you can give us a 30,000 foot view of a mile high view. That's not quite 30,000 feet, but your journey in chiropractic, how you've gotten to where you are now. What brought you into chiropractic, and you know the big milestones through your long and wonderful chiropractic practice.
I don't know. You said long and whatever. Yeah. So I'm in my 30th year of practice now, which is pretty awesome. And I got into chiropractic in a kind of a really weird way. I was at University of Calgary doing a fourth year in science, and I was actually doing comparative anatomy morphology dissection of structure and function.
Wow.
And I had a number of different primates that I was dissecting the shoulder girdle of. And with that, you were seeing how the animal was able to adapt to their environment, where you needed something where they had a full range of motion. There was a lot of, a very shallow glenoid fossa, and then the humerus would come into that, versus an animal that was an also primate that was running, had a very, you know, defined one, much less range of motion, but it received the benefit of speed,
right,
as they're locomoting. So that kind of led me into sort of the whole idea of structure function. I was doing some neuroscience and biology background and things like that. And I had my first experience with a chiropractor in an inadvertent way. I was working in a summer job, hurt my low back, and went to see a chiropractor because that's all I knew that they did. And it was through this chiropractor is asking me these questions in my history, and I've got my brain going in two directions. One is like, oh man, they don't really know a lot. Number two is I'm curious what's going on here. And first of all, the one was, why are you asking me about my overall health? Because what does that have to do with my low back?
Right.
Which didn't quite get me from a very sort of science background. And then the second one was when she started to ask me about very specific things in my history, the red flag for me was the history that I had as a really sick kid, like a healthy kid, but very sick in some ways, because I had these severe allergies as a child, and I actually had two bedrooms. So from spring until the first frost, I had a bedroom that had an air purifier in it and me. Right. And then I had a bedroom that had all my toys and my clothes and everything else in it. And I remember when I would sleep at night as a little kid, I had this glass of water beside my bed. And when I woke up in the morning, I would take a pill to, you know, not have any symptoms.
Right.
And back in the 60s, it was either Tylenol, or not Tylenol, but Dimetapp, Allarest, things along those lines. Pyrobenzamine was the third one. And I remember as a little kid thinking, wow, if I take this pill and I chew it up, then I'm going to get healthier that much quicker, because my idea was no symptoms.
Right.
I went through 10 years of allergy shots. Now, you'd think that maybe after a few, when they don't work, you'd be stopped. But hey, you know, I was a good little doctor's, whatever, experiment, yep. I guess, in retrospect. And so when I went to this chiropractor and she's asking me about all of what was going on, I'm kind of looking at her like, well, I've got environmental allergies, Dodo. That's caused by pollens in the air. Thinking I was being, you know, pretty smart, and how my immune system was hyperreactive and all this other stuff. And she's asked one simple question, which was the biggie, and you can anticipate it. And it was, if you and I are breathing the same air right now, would you agree that we're both breathing in all the same pollens, or are all the pollens just going to your nostrils? And I said, well, we would both be, yeah, exactly. We would both be breathing in the same pollens. And she said, well, if pollen causes allergies, then if you and I are breathing the same air, hence the same pollens, and I don't have allergies, why do you? And that was my pivotal moment, because it was like this light bulb went on, wait a second, I've never gotten to really asking that question as to why in the first place. Why wasn't my body adapting to the environment? Why was it overreactive? And that literally was what led me to chiropractic. So I had my first adjustment after, of course, and she's checking my neck and I'm like, it hurts down here. It doesn't hurt there. Why are you here? She checked my full spine and she explained how the nervous system is all integrated. You don't want to just look at one part. And it was an amazing experience. Even though I didn't have symptoms in my upper neck, it was like someone had taken earmuffs off my ears and I had this clarity in my mind. And I mean, I was always a great student and I'd never had issues in schooling, but it was like this fog was lifted, even though I didn't even know I had a fog.
Right.
And after that, I went, that's what I want to do. Forget this whole neuroscience thing. Forget neurosurgery. I want to become a chiropractor. And it was really an awesome experience. And then what might be relevant to some of your listeners is when I got out of chiropractic college, life wasn't quite how it had been painted when I was a student. So I'd done well in school, well in clinic, get out, and I'm sitting there in my office with nobody in it, waiting for people to show up, because of right. course that's what we're all taught, which doesn't happen. But I was really miserable. I was not doing what I thought I would be doing. I wasn't where I thought I would be, and so on and so forth. So that finally came to a head. And the thing that got me was like the bookshelves behind you is I was looking at my bookshelves behind me and in between two books, there was a piece of paper and I pulled it out and I'm really like disheartened at this point thinking I'm going to leave the profession. And it was my letter as to why I wanted to become a chiropractor that I'd written 5 years before. And when I read that, I burst into tears. I was really, that was my sort of lowest low. Because I looked at my letter talking about connection, talking about innate potential, talking about opportunity, talking about the ability for the body to comprehend and respond to itself in the environment. And then I looked what I was doing and I'm like, these are not the same thing. I don't know what to do. I've cheated on myself. I'm not, no wonder I'm not happy. And so what I did do is I was obviously really humbled in that moment. And at the same time, it was a springboard moment as well, because to the level I was low, I also had people, places, and things come into my life that I was now open and ready to see, and I took hold of them, and I left where I was, I opened up a new practice in the town I wanted to be in with $10,000, got myself a mentor, and followed through with the mentorship program, and within 6 months, I had a waiting list practice. And my career has just gone from there. And I don't know if I would have appreciated the success if I hadn't gone through the pains first, because it made it even better and more passionate to be able to practice the way I wanted to practice and do a lot of things that I wanted to do. And I don't know if my mind would have been open prior to that, because I was my little scientific self.
Right. What do you think are those things that, you know, Pete, you know, obviously everybody goes through cycles in their practice, whether they're beginning, whether they've been in for a long time. And, you know, you mentioned something earlier, which I'll tie into what you just said, was, you know, people ask you the same questions. It's, you know, when is my blank going to go away? You know, why does this work? You know, the regular list of questions. And you get those over. And something that you said is, you know, you always have to be at that, answering it the 10th time you answer it with equal excitement and passion as that first time. But when people kind of get into those kind of ruts or those places where they drop down, what are the things that they can do for themselves while they're sitting between their own four walls, in addition to getting out to awesome programs like Mile High here in August and seeing yourself and connecting with you? What are some things that people can do to, you know, find that connection in themselves to make that change?
Okay, so I'm going to give you and your listeners a little exercise to do with me. It's really, really
fun. That's awesome.
All right, so what you're going to do is I want you to point your finger up towards the ceiling, arms straight, and you're going to draw a circle on the ceiling in a clockwise manner. So go like a clock, drawing in the clock, the way that the clock goes around. And then keeping your arm, your hand going in the same direction, I want you to bring it down to the level of your waist. and then I want you to look at your fingertip and tell me what direction it's going in.
Change directions.
Isn't that interesting?
That's interesting.
So, what happened for it to change directions?
That's a good question.
Change in frame of reference. Change in perspective. Change in the way that we actually can look at a problem. So that's, believe it or not, the number of people I've taught that simple little thing that when we're stuck, what I'm going to ask people to do is think of this and look at how can I see this differently? What can I learn? How can what I've experienced serve me? But not in a negative. Look, you got to look for the way that it can be empowering. In that something I'm learning about myself, or what am I not seeing yet? And that's a key point. And I always put that word yet in because that opens up possibility for the universe. So those are sort of some of those questions is, what am I currently not seeing yet? If I was to know the answer, what would it be? And sometimes borrowing the experience of others. So let me give you an example. If I had a case of a woman that happens to come in and I'm doing Webster technique on them, and they're pregnant and I'm doing Webster technique, and say I'm not getting the perceived outcomes that I was hoping for, rather than getting frustrated with myself, which of course takes us into disempowerment, lowers our creativity, lowers our resourcefulness, become curious. And if you become curious, then borrow the wisdom of masters. So it might be, gosh, what would Jeannie Ohm do? And you don't even have to ask her. You just put yourself in the mindset of what would Jeannie Ohm do? Get really, really quiet with your mind, that right. Mental talk, and turn it off, that beta brain, turn it off, and just wait for the answer. And invariably something will come up. So the key is to move ourselves from the frustration, anger, whatever, stress, into right. An empowered state, which opens up our prefrontal cortex, technically, and it allows us to be more creative, more resourceful, more empowered. We feel more co-creative as well. We compete with people versus power over people. And it's amazing how we will see solutions. It's amazing how they open up. And those have been certainly my biggest key points, is to get really quiet and listen. And it's just like Vijay said, listen to the bigness of the fellow within.
Yeah, and that curiosity is so key. But I love how it's kind of like a micro macrocosm of the chiropractic adjustment. It's the pattern interrupt that causes that kind of silent moment for the emergence of something else. And it's we I think get caught up in that interference that's always going on. And it doesn't just happen in our spines. It happens, obviously, between the, you know, few inches between our ears of how we kind of interfere with that connection and that coherence.
Yeah. And sometimes it's changing our own physiology, right? So it's you might not have the answer right there, but, if people know what tends to work for them, whether it's meditation, visualization, could be tapping, you know, emotional freedom technique, could be getting adjusted more frequently if that's needed, could be getting walking out with Mother Nature, taking a moment where you can get quiet and spend it on yourself. And when I say self, I don't mean selfies and I don't mean on the internet.
Right.
I mean quiet space to listen for those hidden answers. And as I said, I was interested a few years ago, I was reading a paper by Angelica DeMocha out of Temple University, and she did functional MRIs on where trust and distrust are located in the brain. And what's amazing with that is that when we go into trust, we go prefrontal cortex, and we start dumping dopamine, serotonin, and oxytocin, the bonding hormone, the hormone that creates community, the anticipation of positive reward, and a sense of well-being from the inside out. And of course, prefrontal is our creativity, resourcefulness, executive functions, all the ability to plan and dream and understand emotional involvement. And when it's like opening up the door to the universe in many ways. And when we go into distrust, where they found the functional MRI was lighting up was the amygdala. So we go into stress and cortisol, which means need to defend, need to be right, power over, competition, separation, fight, flight, I like to say yell, tell, sell, and we're just not present. We're dealing with our needs over the needs of other people.
Right. And that's the movement of the self with the little s to the self with the big s. It makes a big difference.
Absolutely.
Not just in capitalization. So you mentioned the Webster technique back there. You mentioned Jeannie Ohm, who's spoken at Mile High. For those of you who aren't aware of the International Chiropractic Pediatric Association, amazing, amazing organization. You must join. You must get involved with their programs, in addition to coming to Mile High here in August. They're not going to be at the program, but you will be at the program. But we will have information about the ICPA. That was a very long sentence.
Awesome. I speak for them, so that's awesome.
But you've been so involved with the importance of care for women, for care for children, for care of pregnant women, and really getting children in care. Maybe you can share a little bit about that passion and how you've been involved with that throughout your professional career.
Well, you know, it wasn't like I sort of set out to be a family chiropractor. I didn't really set out to be kind of anything. I would say I was probably originally more sort of in that whole sports mindset. And it was through some cases that I said yes to parents that asked me if I could help their children. And I just would always say yes before I said, I don't know. And there was a couple of ones. There was one really, really early on of this little 18-month-old that wasn't crawling. She was commando crawling, so just using her arms, not using her legs. And she'd been to, oh my gosh, a neurologist, an orthopedic surgeon. And, you know, they couldn't figure out why she wasn't crawling. And so the mom brings her in to me. And I was really young in practice at that point, like within like a couple of years. And I remembered thinking, what the heck am I going to do with her? Like, she's already been to an orthopedic surgeon and neurologist. And then like, oh my gosh, I'm a chiropractor. Maybe check her spine. That would be unique. And check the quality of her nervous system. So when I did this assessment, of course, being a good chiropractor, I did all my orthopedics, I did all my neuros, and they were all normal. And when I actually checked the spine, her sacral base was so subluxated. It was subluxated posterior. And I remember when I was chatting with the mom, I said, look, I don't know if this will or will not cause her, you know, legs to start to change and how they're functioning. But what I can tell you is this is not functioning normally. And it would make sense to me that there's a disconnect between brain and body and brain, meaning legs. And what I want to do is adjust her and let's see what happens. And that was really my report of findings. And so I know it was pretty bizarre.
But it was the inspired above down report
exactly.
of findings.
And I remembered adjusting this little one and it really made a loud noise and it actually scared me. And I remember giving her back to her mother saying, that's an adjustment, and call me in a couple of days. Like, I just didn't even know what to do. But I remember part of my gorilla on my back, or my, you know,
the monkey mind,
my saboteur, it was saying, oh my gosh, you probably just hurt this child. And even though the child's happy after their adjustment, what if I could see the headlines now? And, you know, it was all my negative self-talk was coming up. So 2 days later, the mother calls and she's in tears on the phone. And Lorraine, my staff, literally interrupts me, which it happens pretty rarely. I'm with another patient and I take this call and I'm thinking, oh man, of course, my negative self-talk is starting first. I had to work on that. And the mom's on the phone and she's telling me how this little one is not only, she's bringing her knees to her chest, which she hadn't been doing before, and she's actually attempting crawling. 2 days, one adjustment. And I was thrilled, obviously. I'm in tears, Lorraine is in tears, the mom is in tears, because this is like the power of an adjustment. Like, what's that worth, right? In kickstarting this girl's ability to reset herself. But I was also angry, because I was like, how come I wasn't taught this as part of my normal curriculum? And where do I go to learn more? Because I never want to have that feeling again of just not being sure. And so from that point, I started attending some pediatric lectures. And then I was with the ICA because they were the only program at that point in time that had a diplomate program. So that's what I took and graduated from that in 1996. And then Larry Webster asked me to start speaking for him in 1998. Which I started to do that with the ICPA, and I've been on and off teaching for them for a number of years and helping a number of them put together their diplomate program that they've just, you know, amped it up to a whole new level, which is pretty amazing. So from there, what happened, because I did my diplomate, a lot of chiropractors kept coming to me and saying, Liz, how do you do this? What do you do? And so I developed a few, you know, small weekend seminars, you know, 5 hours on straight exam, 5 hours on straight adjusting. And then, of course, I develop myself, and so that starts to move into different directions that way as well.
Yeah, and that's so great, too, of you know, it's kind of, you never really know what the path is going to be, but it's that, you know, those things that the ripples in the lives and the connecting of, you know, how, you know, like you said, I didn't necessarily intend to start with a family practice, but all of a sudden, not only do you have families in your practice, but you're working with other chiropractors who have families in their practice, and that even creates an even further and broader ripple with it.
Exactly. And you know, what's really interesting is what I can say is that I've always, I inadvertently, I follow where my joy happens, where my passion happens. And certainly when I was seeing families, I was passionate. And so that energy was always coming across to my patients. And I'm a big person where I like to plant seeds with my patients. So there would be things like, I would love the opportunity to check your child, or why do you think a chiropractor would want to see children? You know, I pose questions to get them to think about it. How many problems do you think a kid has to have before they see a chiropractor? What do you think creates these problems? How do we know? How would you know? And so by asking my patients a lot of questions, it gets them to the point where they eventually either will answer and we can have a better, robust dialogue about it, or they're going to say, I don't know. Tell me. And that's the whole key point that I moved myself from telling patients what to do to asking questions and the right questions to the point that you engage their brain to where they don't know an answer to the question, like what happened to me.
Right.
And then all of a sudden I'm willing and open to learn something different. And yeah. That has been pivotal for me, because I think that as a profession, we get so excited that we want to educate our patients that it ends up coming across as yell, tell, and sell,
yes.
And sell, and sell, and tell, and tell, versus asking if they want to hear it in the first place. But when we pose a question, so something as simple as on my histories, what's health? What does a healthy child mean to you? And a parent will answer, you know, two or three lines, but then I get into questions. So tell me, how does a healthy child walk? How does a healthy child sleep? What do you think a healthy child eats? How does a healthy child breastfeed? How does a healthy child interact with their siblings? How does a healthy child, you know, what do they, what, how do they grow and develop? How does a healthy child poop, you know? So you go through, like, you can probably go 15, 20 things.
Yeah.
But boy, you get these parents that start thinking, and then it's what holds all that together? How does a child interpret their world? Through what system? Zip it, and then they start to go, nervous system, you know, and then it's like, you just plant the seeds.
Yeah, and that's so key too, to get to that kind of neocortical activity of being able to upload some kind of new experiences. You know, it's like that kind of wave/vomit style of communication, you know, is not always the most effective, as we've all seen.
Exactly. I guess the best way to say is, how well do you like to be talked at versus exactly. Having a conversation with?
We're all in that same situation.
Yes.
So you're also involved, interestingly, in things beyond just, you know, chiropractic offices. You're involved in your community. You're involved speaking really around the world. Maybe you can share a little bit about the humanitarian, Dr. Liz, and some of the things that you're involved in communities and other places.
Sure. Well, a lot of different things is, you know, I've been involved like YMCA board, and, you know, that's got a $40 million budget in my town. Children's Aid, been involved with that. Right now, what I'm looking to put together is a group of chiropractors to do what I would call an urban core project, because nice. In our town, we now have a lot of chiropractors. And my thinking is, you know, we have this this group of people that are the unseen. They're seen but unseen. And I am looking at how do we put together, a clinic, but a place
right.
that might only be open a couple hours a week. And I know there's some dentists that are looking at doing the same thing. So we'll tag team probably with a few other professionals to be of service to this group. And so that way, if, you know, a chiropractor can come in 2 hours once every few months, because if we can get, you know, 20, 30 chiropractors involved, but I want to do it where each chiropractor can use the technique that they use. But I want to keep really tight records, because I want to see where are these people when they first come in, and let's see how they change in their lives as they're going through. So I'm going to call that the Urban Core Project.
Nice.
I'm meeting with people right now, and that would all be free. That would all be donated time for us to be able to do that. But it's well needed. And it's, as I said, it's part of a community And how you can tell a lot about a community is how you treat the elderly, how you treat the disadvantaged, and how you treat your young. And so those are certainly passions of mine in that regard. And then I've been involved regulatory-wise as well. So that's been a really interesting journey. And
as that road usually is.
It's important work, there's no question. And I also love it that there's opportunities to be proactive from that we see our regulatory body being very proactive in things, in wanting chiropractors to be able to maximize to their to the limit of what our current scope of practice in Ontario is, certainly. Yeah. And that's a neuromusculoskeletal component, which is awesome, without drugs and surgery. So that's good.
Yeah.
And that's interesting.
Good. Yeah. And I mean, I think that's so important too, is that people, I think, like you said, at that one moment where you were just sitting in your office and it's just you and, you know, the books and the piece of paper. I mean, when you're in that place, kind of thinking like, hey, I'm going to be out there impacting the community. Hey, I'm going to be out there impacting legislation and regulation. That's a big span for most people to kind of get. But I think the key there is that you are really just uniquely you of, you know, what is it? What's my passion? What drives me? What makes me, you know, that coherent person and, you know, becomes that attractiveness, that greatness that's there. So, you know, that's awesome. And I think that's part of the awesomeness, which is the factor, which is part of you.
Thank you.
part of the awesomeness is what are you looking forward to of being here at Mile High 4? For those of you who have not heard me say this four times already in this conversation, Mile High, August 18th through 21st, here just outside Denver, Colorado. What are you looking forward to being here with all of us wonderful Coloradians, Canadians, Kiwis? We have people coming from New Zealand and other assorted continental folk.
Well, first of all, I'm looking first and foremost to the community, because I think it's, you know, when I saw what was going on last year with Mile High, I was like, oh, I so wanted to be there. When I looked at the conversation that I was following vicariously through the internet, it looked like it was an awesome discussion. And I think that that is important to be with brethren, that sometimes it's that challenge when you're having a discussion that births something even better than where it was before. And it raises the vibration and the discussion and the where the profession could potentially go, which I think is awesome that way. And what I certainly want to be doing is I'm going to be speaking on pediatrics. I think I have a whole hour to do that.
So nice.
It's going to be very clipped. But what I want to do is take people through what they're currently doing and see how they can be doing something even better. So I'm going to use a lot of my transformational leadership background in a coaching model to do that, which will be very different versus me showing you how to do a moral reflex or how to do a Babinski reflex, right, or some palpation of a spine. It's not going to be that. It's going to be very different. And it's going to be something that you can take home and work forward from, which nice. I'm really quite excited to be able to do, because I'll take basically the VSC model and what are the measurements we can do when we're seeing a child, and how do we document that, and then how do we implement our care, and then how can we remeasure that from an outcome standpoint that just is going to add to the robustness of your evaluation and the rationale and the evidence you have to continue to see children, because they all need to be checked.
Nice. And that, for you who have not already booked your plane ticket, should be the deal closer to book your ticket now to get out here to Colorado. For people there, look at the bottom of this page. This doesn't work unless you're looking at the video right now. There are links to find out more about Dr. Liz. DrLiz.ca is the website to check out more about Liz. Just before we go, any closing words for people who are out there in their offices? Maybe they're listening in their car. Maybe they're in their back office listening. Maybe they're, you know, at home watching on their computer. Last words for those people who are out there touching lives every day in their practices.
Sure. First of all, thank you for doing what you do. Your population really needs you, and probably needs you more than you will ever realize. And what I wish for you is that creativity and the resourcefulness that you can think on the fly and you can be truly present with your people. And as Buddha said, to know and not to do is not to know. So I'd like you to just do a little mini SWOT or 360 on yourself and your practice, and look at the things that you know that you know, but you're not doing them right now, And the next step is, what's it going to take for you to start to do? And if you do that, how is that going to move you into your preferred future? And when you move into that preferred future, how that's going to upregulate, and then you're going to feel even more creative, more resourceful, more on purpose, more connected within and with your patients and with your community. So I really want you to know that you are important, and what the public learns from you is how they will judge chiropractic.
Yeah.
That's the important piece too.
Thank you, Dr. Liz. Liz Anderson Peacock will be with us at Mile High 4 here in Colorado this August. We look forward to seeing you there, and thank you, Liz.
Well, looking forward to it, everybody.
Like our page on Facebook, www.facebook.com/milehighchiro.